Welcome to the Should A Bet More podcast presented by Gold Boys. Coming up on the show, Brandon Anderson of the Action Network will join us. We will discuss the NFL draft, get his thoughts on these Wednesday NBA playoff games, the series ahead, and the NBA is where we'll start. We'll get to the Wednesday games, but we have to lead off where we let off last time. The Knicks and the Sixers, an absolutely classic game. I am recording this right after the game. I am still stunned, just in complete disbelief at what I just saw. My goodness, the Knicks, who have waited since 1999 to close out a series at home, up six with 25 seconds to go. It's just a mere formality. If Maxey misses that three, who knows? Maybe they don't foul. Maybe they give one token foul. It is over. Up six with 25 seconds to go. I think if you go through all the games this year where all the with teams up that margin with that amount of time left, 6 and 25, I don't know. Maybe you find one team that lost. I mean, that's a 99%+ situation there. Maxey hits the three, gets fouled, and Maxey missed a bunch of free throws down the stretch. He missed a couple at 90-87 that were huge, and then he missed one at 91-88 that was huge. And then the Knicks, it's going to be lost. They were up at five or six, and then Hart threw the ball away where there was no reason to push it. And again, it's one of these subtle plays in a game like this. There's just 100 plays that kind of get forgotten. There was the out of bounds play, which we didn't get a good look at when it was Hartenstein saved. It looked like he did save it, but the point is, Maxey with a Reggie Miller-esque performance, 7 points in the last 25 seconds, the three, the foul shot, Hart splits a pair, and then Maxey hits the long three, and you have to foul. I know these old school coaches, they're so stubborn, and it is dangerous, especially in the NBA when you get the continuation. These guys are good at drawing the fouls. There's so much of a benefit that goes to the offensive player. Bump into him, swipe at the ball, do something. Do not let him get a three. It is very hard to score 3 points with two free throws. Play the free throw game, make him, you know, do what Lowry did the other day where you have to miss a couple free throws, or you have to miss a free throw and get the rebound and hope for a putback, hope for an offensive rebound and a three. Make him go that route, because just making one three-pointer, it's just it's too easy to just make one three and tie the game. Knicks got a bad look at the end. Brunson gets swatted away. And then the Knicks have a five-point lead again in overtime. You figure, you know, that's why it's so hard to handicap momentum, because you figure, oh, Knicks are going to be just completely depressed out of it. Oh, boom, up five. All right, they got it again. And then before you know it, Philly claws back, goes on a 9-10-0 run, and takes command. Last minute or so was pretty anticlimactic. And you did get the flagrant with Embiid, which I didn't like to call. I mean, it's the correct call. And by the way, Embiid, this is why people get sick of Embiid. Embiid sitting there arguing, like, you whacked him in the face. The only debate was whether it's a foul or a flagrant. You can't sit there. He's acting like, how did you call that? What are you blowing the whistle for? He's just completely numb, completely unaware of just what happened in such denial. You whacked him in the face. It's a foul. It's a flagrant foul. By the rule, it's a flagrant. Now, we can not like the call. I don't love the call. But by the rule, it's absolutely a flagrant foul. And it's definitely a foul. So, you know, he's sitting there like, who, me? How could you call that? It's a little tough to take, but boy, for a Sixers team that had so many tough playoff losses, they come out and facing an elimination. The season is over. The game is over. And to pull it out, and now you go home in a situation where you can force a game seven. And I do think we're getting a game seven. I think the Knicks will probably get one of these two. I think they'll probably win a game seven at home. And Embiid looks tired. Maxey's tired. And Brunson looks tired too. But I figure the crowd will get them over the hump in game seven. But boy, you should already be getting ready for the winner of the next round here as that game is going on. It looks like it's going to be the Pacers. I'm sure it'll be the Pacers at some point, even if it's not tonight. But I do think by the time you listen to this, it will be the Pacers. And then now it'll be the Pacers waiting for the winner of the series, and just a blown opportunity for the Knicks to not only win this game, win this series, but look who you got in the next round. You got an Indy team where you're going to have home court advantage and you're much better than them. So, oh my goodness, just as bad a loss as you could possibly have. Again, I think they will get a split. I think they'll ultimately win the series, but how could you be shocked right now? Like, if I told you, hey, Philly wins game six, and then who knows in game seven. So just brutal, just absolutely brutal loss for the Knicks as the Sixers win. Classic game. Like, we haven't gotten that many of these moments in the playoffs. Been kind of a ho-hum playoff. It really has been, but that was just an all-time classic of a ball game in game five. And you could say, hey, the Knicks got a miracle in game two. They're shoving Maxey to the ground, no call, two threes, and in sort of a similar gut punch fashion, and they even out. That's fair. But hey, when you're up six with 25 seconds left, about to go to the next round, everyone's dancing in the stands, the garden's rocking, and you don't get it done, and you have to play another game. That is a hard one to stomach, to have to go back and play in Philly. That crowd's going to be crazy. Now, Philly has not had a great home crowd. Knicks just won there the other day. They haven't, you know, they lost closeout games to Miami. They've lost closeout games to the Hawks a few years ago. They've lost big games plenty of times in Philly, so it's not like they're vulnerable, but I do think that Philly finds a way to push this to game seven. And boy, just stunning end to that game. The games on Wednesday, we only got a couple. And look, when you start to get sweeps in five gamers, like there's only one series left in the West. That's Mavs Clips. The other three, sweep, Denver beats LA in five. And man, it's uncanny how similar these Nuggets Lakers games are, where the Nuggets basically get outplayed for most of the game, but then they win at the buzzer. I mean, it's basically happened three or four times over the course of these 2 years in the playoffs. It's got to be frustrating for the Lakers, where they led 75% of the series and lose in five. Just heartbreaking. That I thought was headed for a game six, similar to Knicks six. We're just rooting for some drama. The fact that they were down 3-0, and who knows, maybe could force a game seven. It looked like they could at some point on Monday, but the Nuggets just continue. It's these games are like carbon copies of each other. So when you get a sweep and then a couple of four gamers, then a five gamer, you're not going to be looking at that many games on nights like this. So Celtics, Miami, Celtics laying 14. I would expect that to be over. If you're looking for a bet, I would go Heat team total under. I just think that's been the way to go. Boston let their guard down. They blew the sweep last week, but ever since then, it's been kind of what we expected, where it's just not a fair fight. Porzingis did get hurt, so that could be a factor down the road. You figure he's back maybe around the start of the conference finals. Heat team total under 92.5. That's the way I'd go. Heat just have no offense. Unless they're going to bang in a million threes, there's just no path for them to score here. And I think Boston learned their lesson in game two, plus the fact that Porzingis got hurt. Say, hey, no more messing around. Let's get out of here. Let's end the series. No more injuries. Let's get ready for the next round. So don't love laying the 14 if I had to take it or lay it. Never trust Boston laying these big numbers. You really don't, but I'd probably lay it. But team total under 92.5 for the Heat looks good. Clippers, Mavs laying three. I like under 207.5. Luka doesn't look healthy. Kawhi's not going to play. Life on the line. I think the Mavs probably win this series and win one of these games in LA and win game six, but home court has not meant a lot in this series. With the series a few years ago, this series so far, the road teams have done fine. And if Luka's not going to be healthy, I just think this is kind of a coin flip. I'd look towards taking the three. Wouldn't be surprised if they split the next two, and then who knows in game seven. So I saw some places like Dallas is laying -190 for the series, get +170 on the Clips. To me, that's too much. I know no Kawhi, but Luka's got this big wrap around his knee. Their bench isn't great. To me, this is a toss-up series where I would take the three. I think Dallas probably wins, but I'd rather just take the points, take the plus money. So those are the two games on Wednesday. Timberwolves Nuggets is set. That starts Saturday. We're down to 4.5 in game one. The Nuggets laying and the series price Nuggets -220. These teams are just, they always run into each other. They played to get in the play-in. It was the play-in. It was before the play-in. It was for the last playoff spot. The eighth seed had to be, 2018? And then they played, and they're in the same division. They played basically a de facto division title game last week of the regular season, even though Denver ended up losing to San Antonio and blowing it. So these teams bump into each other a lot. I would think Denver gets it done, but Denver's shown enough vulnerability here. And we can spend more time on this Friday. I'm going to have Drew Dinsick on to go over the NBA playoffs, go over the Kentucky Derby, and we'll spend more time on it. The way I'd lean here, I think Denver wins, but you can get Timberwolves +1.5 games. I don't think that's a bad way to play it. I really don't. I think that would be a seven-game series, a competitive series. Denver's, again, still the best team, but they're not dominant. There's so many comparisons to them and the Chiefs where, okay, you got Jokic just like you got Mahomes, where it's a close game. Jokic usually is going to get it done. I don't know that. You know, they're not going to sweep. They're probably not going to win in five. So maybe they win in six, but I think they win, but I win in seven. So T-Wolves plus a game and a half, I think, is a good bet. And again, we will have plenty of time to discuss that on Friday as we head towards the second round. I like the second round because it's a nice balance. Like the first round, you have so many games, and that might be my favorite one, but the second's close. We have, it's still a balance of the quantity of games and the quality of games. You rarely get a bad second round matchup or a non-competitive one. I guess Celtics Mavs or a Celtics in winner of Cavs Magic will probably be that. But other than that, the matchups are usually good. Once you get to the second round, you still got games, usually multiple games every night. So the second round's a lot of fun. So We will discuss that with Brandon Anderson, as I am still just reeling in disbelief over what I just saw in Knicks Sixers, and just feel bad for the Knicks. I think they'll still get it done. I really do think they'll still get it done. But if they don't, that is now it's the first round, so you can't compare it to like 86 Mets, Bill Buckner, things like that. It's not that level, but it's an all-timer. I mean, that is an all-timer. If it ends up being Sixers and seven, and the Sixers go to the conference finals and the Knicks get bounced here, that is one that you never get over. That goes down in history. But still two chances for the Knicks, two chances to win one game. You'd rather be up 3-2 than down 3-2. What a game. So we will discuss the Wednesday games with Brandon Anderson, talk some NFL draft, bets he's made off of last Thursday and Friday. That is next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. Talk a little NBA playoffs. Talk a little NFL draft. A first-time guest, and this is, of all the guests I've ever had, I don't think anybody, I know anybody, there's never been anybody that's made me more money than this next person. It is Brandon Anderson from the Action Network. Brandon, thanks for coming on. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. That is high praise. Happy to have made you some money. Hopefully some of our long shot futures we've hit along the way. Got a few more long shots I like today, but you know, it's been a great few days of NBA basketball. Slow playoffs started, I guess, but I feel like we kind of finally hit the ground running the last couple days.
We'll start with the Wednesday games. Only a couple, with these series ending quicker than we might think. You just start to run out of games quicker than you might think, with Lakers Nuggets only going five, a couple sweeps in the West. I mean, we had pretty quick series here, but the one that's still going in the West, Dallas laying 2.5 to the Clippers. You know, it's interesting. I think everyone has this feeling, oh, no Kawhi, Clippers are done. And I've kind of thought that at times, but Dallas has not put them away. It's 2-2. Clippers now have home court. Luka, maybe there's an issue with the knee here. How do you handicap this game and the rest of the series?
Yeah, this is a hard series to get a handle on. I feel like this has been like the Mad Lib series, right? Like you just tell me what happened in the game. Like, oh, this guy hit 8 threes and this guy fouled out in 12 minutes. And this, like, sure. Okay, sure. That happened in that game. It's very much just who hit shots that game. So my instinct in the series has just been to kind of keep going back and forth a little bit, almost even on the series, is be like, all right, I don't really know necessarily. I just want a long series. That was my favorite thought going into it, was just six games or more. And we're obviously locked into that now. And I still think you might even be able to get by with this playing both sides of the series, like play the plus odds on one side, wait till they win a game and get ahead, then just play the other side. Might be a little late on that one. I've been mostly looking to not have to pick a side or to pick the underdog, just take the extra points, take the plus odds if I need to. However, I did find a stat on this one. So game five, series tied 2-2. The team that is the favorite that lost as the favorite in game four, so that's Dallas here, they're favorite on the road, that team is 24-11-1 against the spread. 69% cover rate. So I don't know how much the Kawhi Leonard thing affects that cap, because obviously that, I think, is why the Mavs are favored on the road. I don't think they would be otherwise. But I think if you want to play Dallas, I would lean the Mavs to cover. If you want to fade Dallas, the way I did that earlier in the series is take the team total under. We've had a lot of low scoring games. And so the team total under kind of gives you an out where, like, okay, maybe you just don't score and you didn't win, and that's a win. Or Dallas has gone under the 106.5 and won a game, so you might still be able to get a Dallas win and win that way too. So I'm probably on props more for this one. I can give you a couple of those, but that's my thought on the series right now.
Sure. What do you have for props?
I like James Harden points over 20.5. If you look at the splits with and without Kawhi, he scored without Kawhi 22 and 21, and he took only 13 and 14 shots. That was with Kawhi. Without Kawhi, he's at 28 and 33, 17 shots both games. So over 20.5, he's over that literally in all four games anyway. So especially without Kawhi, I think that's a good spot. You can go 11-1 for top scorer in the game, just in case he puts up another one of those near 30-point games. Obviously, you're probably looking at the other stars on that one. And then if you do series bets, I really love the series bet on series 3-point leader. So right now we got, for 3-pointers, obviously we had a lot of barrage of threes last game. So Harden's got 17, Kyrie 16, PG 14, Luka's at 13. However, that's not the number you want to look at for threes leader. You want to look at the bottom of the denominator, the who's shooting the most. Here's that number. Harden, 34. Kyrie, 33. PG, 33. Luka, 49. Luka has 50% more three-point attempts. He just hasn't made them yet, but we know he's streaky. We know he can hit them. Luka is plus 400 to hit the most threes in the series. He's behind by four right now. We got at least two games left. We know Luka's going to be firing. He's putting up over 12 a game. The other guys are getting 8 a game. So I'll bet on the math. I like Luka 4-1 to finish with most threes in the series.
Trying to find that as we speak. What is that under? Is that under series props? There's so many different markets with.
Yeah, it's under. Like, it depends on the book. Some books don't have it. It's on series prop leader or series.
Yeah.
Something like that. It depends on the book.
I'm on DraftKings. I know I've seen them there. I don't know. Do they update it from game?
It is on DraftKings. I don't know. Can I name books on here?
Yeah, name whatever you want.
So a bet 365 is where it's plus 400.
Okay.
DraftKings does have it up, but the odds are a little lower. The one other name I'll shout here while we're on it, Paul George, his attempts are way higher without Kawhi. He's only at 5 and 6 with Kawhi on the court. He's at 12 and 10 without him. And we just saw him hit a ton, obviously. He's 8-1. So I don't mind here betting both of them. I do like a 2-1 split, more my bet on Luka, but you bet both of them together. That one's PG's 800 at DraftKings and Luka plus 400 at bet 365.
That is good info. And if anyone's searching their app, I'm on DraftKings series player props. Then you got points there, threes leader, rebounds there. Again, there's just so many different markets with this stuff where you can kind of get lost on this app, just looking for all the different stuff. But I just had to pin you down here for an answer. Who wins the series?
My gut says Clippers. I don't even know why. My gut just says Clippers.
Yeah, I feel like they play a little. I don't know. Kawhi wasn't healthy. So without him, I think it was good to get him off the court. Just it was a little awkward trying to fit him in. And I don't know. There's just a little less pressure. Like Harden, sometimes he hasn't done well as a favorite in some of these series, but I don't know. Just feels like there's a little bit of a less pressure. So again, I think we're going 7. It's one of these series, you know, going back to a couple of years ago when they played. Home court hasn't meant as much. We've seen that in this series. We saw it a couple of years ago. So we'll probably get 7. We'll probably get a close game in game 7. So who knows? The other one Wednesday night. Not going to be as close, I wouldn't think. Celtics laying 14, total 199.5. My bet here has just been Heat team total under. Bet the Celtics to sweep, which don't regret, but it didn't get home. Anything you're playing here, Heat Celtics?
Yeah, serious prop on this one also. I like Jason Tatum to lead the series in assists. So that's basically a head-to-head bet against Tyler Hero right now. And he is minus 120. I'd bet this one before game 4. He was a one assist behind Hero, and I got it a plus 290 at DraftKings there. So the number has dropped now. Here's how it's gone. Game 2, Tyler Hero had 14 assists that game. Games 1, 3, and 4, he has 4, 2, and 4 assists. So game 2 is the one that Miami won. Boston defended them completely differently. Like, they sagged off, and they were letting Tyler Hero basically just, like, get the passes out and daring him to beat them, and he did. And they're like, well, don't do that again. And now they're just crushing them the other games. So Tatum, his assists were 3 in that game to Tyler Hero's 14. Throw that game out and it's 21-10. Like, come on. Jason Tatum is routinely 6 assists a game. He's right at that number this series. He's at that number for Miami last year in the playoffs, basically this year in the regular season. Hero's just not a big assist guy. Like, he's out there to shoot, not pass, frankly. So I like that one. Obviously, if you think that the series closes out in 5, then, you know, you like Tatum to get more assists and just Boston to make more buckets that way too. So I like that one. The other thing that I probably won't play much on, but if you want a side here, here's a trend I found just to keep an eye on. And I don't know if this is true of the Celtics anymore, but we know they let these series drag out, right? They again, like you said, they blew the sweep. I like the sweep also, and they blew it. So since 2020, since the bubble, when the Celtics are favored after losing as a favorite, they're 12-4 against the spread. So when they get punched in the mouth, like they did game 2, they show up focused and they try in game 3. We saw that. However, after Celtics win by more than 10, they're 8-16 or 8-15 against the spread in the same time frame. Now, obviously that trend did not hit yesterday in game 4. That was a spot where they came off a big win, covered anyway, but they lost 7 of the last 11 outright. So Miami is like plus 750 on the money line. To me, I'm just staying away from a side here. But if I had to play a side, Miami at home. It's game. Miami back in Boston. Miami's been rough as a dog at home, but the spot where you count out Miami, that's where Miami still hangs around and gets you. So I'm not going to go too crazy on it, but it's too long of a number. The way that Miami has showed up in Boston, treat like their own home court, I think is just priced too long, even with all their guys missing.
Yeah, you hit on it. This is another series where home court has meant absolutely nothing. Road team's 3-1 in this series. Saw last year, even the year before. I mean, the road teams, for whatever reason, just have done really well. Straight up, not even with the number, but just winning, which is very unusual. Let's look ahead to round two. I think this is going to be the series of round two. Jokic, the upstart Timberwolves, Edwards, who's turning into a star before our eyes here. I was surprised the number was a little high. We're looking at Nuggets -5 for game one and Nuggets right around -215 for the series. Any way you're betting this?
Yeah, I haven't done a lot of prep on this one yet, so I just can give you a lean here on the early on. But I like Nuggets -1.5 on the spread on the series. That's what the number I thought we'd be getting. So we're getting a pretty decent number on that. Here's the thing that I can't get past. And we saw this in the series with it just wrapped up with Nuggets Lakers. Denver, on the one hand, is not putting up the numbers that they should be to look dominant. Minnesota is. Minnesota should be the dominant favored team here. Maybe we're getting a setup like we did with Minnesota Phoenix. I picked Phoenix sweep. Did not go well for me. Did not go well. So maybe we have that again. However, the difference is the Nuggets just keep finding ways at the end of the game. Like, they have the look of that team that just knows they can flip the switch. And with 8 minutes left, 6 minutes left, they're like, oh, okay, you hung around, it's tied. Oh, that's cute. Good for you. Okay, well, it's over now. We had a 4-minute stretch where we tried and it's over. And look, cards on the table. I'm a Minnesota sports fan. So I have a Minnesota sports nihilism built into me. I expect the worst at all times. So I'm going to be careful on this series because my heart and my brain are going to conflict at all times on a Minnesota sports pick. I don't think Minnesota has that switch to flip. In the fourth quarter, their offense has been bogged down at times. And we didn't see that against Phoenix because the games weren't really close till the one when Ant just took over late. But a lot of times they have done great in the big lead games, but struggled when things are close. Denver is the opposite of that. And so it just feels like even if Minnesota can hang with their physicality and make this as tight of a series as people are expecting, it still feels like Denver has that flip, the switch that they can flip. And so I just have a hard time getting past it and expecting, like, really, am I expecting the Minnesota Timberwolves to knock off the MVP and the defending champion and Jamal Murray the way that he's playing? I just can't quite get there. So I agree with you. The number feels a little longer than I thought it might be. I suspect money's going to maybe come in on the Minnesota side because that's the buzz right now. But I think I'm just going to have a hard time getting away from Denver. It's one of those where it's like, all right, pay it off, right? Like if I get the MVP and I get the champ and I get the team that just can always get the win at the end of the day, and if they can't come through, then I may just have to take the L on it.
A little surprised to hear you say that. I know you're a Minnesota guy, and I don't know. You might talk me off. I kind of like the +1.5 games where if Minnesota wins, I win my bet. And as long as we go 7, I could see us going 7. Again, it's hard to pick against Jokic. It's almost like picking against Mahomes in football where, hey, at the end of the game, it's close. Right. It's just they have Jokic. You don't. They have Mahomes. You don't. Even though it can be a flawed team, there's a lot of parallels, especially this year, with those teams where you're never blown away by the Chiefs. But you know what? End of a close game, we got Mahomes. But that's, I don't know.
That's about where I'm at also. Yeah. And I think, too, I can't escape this feeling in the back of my head. We saw last year, these teams play in the playoffs. First of all, they played in game 82 to make the playoffs a few years ago. So this is a rivalry that's been building for a while. Then they play in the playoffs. And frankly, Ant played out of his mind. He was great. And the Nuggets still 1-5 anyway. And then what have we heard the whole year long? What have we heard? Well, you know who really played the Nuggets tough? Those Timberwolves. They're the team the Nuggets need to avoid in the bracket. They want to get on the other side. They're like, guess who's heard that all year? Denver, the champions have heard. Well, great title run, but boy, those young Timberwolves really sure played you well. I just have a feeling where we didn't really see the top gear against the Lakers enough because I didn't think that they really took them seriously until they had to. I can't escape feeling that Denver's been sitting there all year going, you know what? give us the Timberwolves in the playoffs, because boy, you think they played us good last year? Think the guy was close? Let's leave no doubt about it this year. And that's a narrative-y thing, but, and maybe again, maybe that's my Minnesota nihilism, but that's the feeling I can't get past here with the Denver pick.
Yeah, I kind of thought all year, if you want to beat Denver, if you're really serious about beating them, get them out of their own building, like get home court. And Minnesota had their chance. I think if they beat Phoenix that final Sunday, they would have gotten it. If they beat them head to head, it was that last Wednesday night, the last week of the regular season, where it felt like a division title game. We didn't know the Nuggets were going to inexplicably lose to the Spurs like that. But just the tiebreaker for me does go to Denver, and having the seventh game at home, starting the first two at home, where, hey, that's just a big advantage. Before we move on to some draft stuff and get you out of here, just feels like it's been a while since we've had a superstar change teams. It's kind of been quiet for a little bit, but some of these older teams have gone all in, and there's just dead ends. The Suns, who knows what the Lakers are going to do, the Sixers, I don't know, Bucks, Clippers. It feels like we're kind of due for one of these mega stars to want out, one of these teams to say, you know what, we got to get some more picks back. Who is that? Do you agree with that? Any idea what we're looking at this summer?
I definitely agree with it. It feels that way. We're in this changing of the guard sort of moment right now, where Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron James combined to win one playoff game, and they're out. They're out, all three, for the first time since 2005. I think that's not my stat. I've seen that out from a lot of places, but like that's a lifetime. That's 2 decades of watching these dudes crush in the playoffs. And now what do we have? We got Shea, and we got maybe Luka, and we got Ant. We got all these young stars that are kind of the new face of the league. And it's, I don't expect these guys to go quietly. I've been brainstorming Durant trades, because when doesn't Kevin Durant want out, right? Like, that's the easy answer. And I thought of this one the other day. Like, I don't have any intel for you. So this is nothing sourced here, but especially if the Clippers flame out without Kawhi Leonard, I don't know which fan base would be like sadder and try to talk themselves into a Kawhi for Durant, just straight up swap.
Oh, wow.
Just swap them over, two fraudulent teams that are never actually the thing they're supposed to be in the playoffs. Just swap them out. And let's just run it back a couple more years to do the exact same thing and like hype it all up and get excited and have them lose in the first round again. That's my trade. What I really want, I want Sam Presti to bring Kevin Durant home to Oklahoma City. Come in, be the veteran, restore your legacy, right? Like, he doesn't even have a team to wear a jersey for his Hall of Fame ceremony. Like, I don't know who's the Durant team. Bring him back to OKC, do the LeBron, win a championship for the Thunder. Now I think Kevin Durant has like a lasting legacy, a thing that he can be and like hang his hat on, that he clearly wants and hasn't found that yet. My other thing I'd prefer is give us the Sonics again, bring back Seattle and give him Durant in the expansion draft. That's where he started. He's supposed to be a Seattle Supersonic. Give him back to Seattle. So that's my Durant fake trades, but I don't know if they're going to happen.
And you, that's the answer to your question. What team does he belong to? He's kind of, the Sonics is the only one where he didn't, I don't know, burning the bridge is strong, but it's not really the wrong phrase, where like the Thunder don't love him, at least not now. If he came back, maybe different story, but the Nets don't love him. I mean, the Warriors, okay. He won there, but he left. It was a little bit, I don't know. There's some emptiness. There's definitely some emptiness over the last, I don't know, ever since he left OKC, where he's just been kind of nomadic. It's kind of sad because he was just a fun player to watch. He was a good story. Everyone liked him, and it just kind of bounced around haplessly these last few years. The draft. Anything happened in the draft that triggered a bet for you?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing an article at Action Network about the team that I am ready to build a real futures position on. And it's not entirely just the draft. The draft was kind of the culmination of just liking the entire offseason. I am ready for the Philadelphia Eagles to hurt me again. I am ready for some Eagles stock. I liked what they did in the draft. Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, like those to me, from the scouting reports, those are the two best man covers in the NFL or in the draft as far as corners coming in. I think DeJean might end up playing some safety. Look, a big problem with that team last year was that Darius Slay and James Bradbury just clearly were over the hill and they could not cover dudes anymore. And the defense really fell apart down the stretch. The offense, I think, was mostly fine. Jalen Hurts got injured, but the offense adds Saquon Barkley. I love that for them. It's expensive, but he's going to add a home run threat that they haven't had. Obviously, there's plenty still to like with the receivers, with Hurts. The offensive line, not quite the same, but you know, Stoutland is going to have those guys ready. The other thing I loved is that they didn't just say, you know what, let's run it back. Let's just do the same thing again like the Cowboys. I like they brought in Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio, and I think that's going to really, like, they missed those dudes. They lost their coordinators to coaching jobs the previous year, and I think we saw it. We felt it last year. Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio are like, top-of-the-line coordinators. I put a lot of stock into coaching, and I just feel like bringing those guys in to add some fresh voices, some different voices, I just like a lot about the Eagles. So I'm on Eagles division. I do not feel good about the Cowboys this year. I think they're just like a ticking time bomb on their all in with nobody drafted and no free agents. Their big move is bringing back Ezekiel Elliott, I guess. So I like Eagles plus money to win the division. And I'm looking at Eagles to win the NFC, Eagles win the Super Bowl. I just feel like this is a team that knows who they are. They're well coached. They're good on both sides of the ball. They're going to be there. They're going to be in the mix. And that price to me is only going to get shorter. I would put them like third, fourth, fifth on the list of Super Bowl contenders, and they're down more like eighth or something. I just feel like they're underpriced right now.
What do you think of what our Vikings did?
I got my Vikings shirt on today. I'm repping the Vikings. I go both ways on it. I'm doing an article on stock up or stock down, and I literally have a TBD by the Vikings. On the one hand, I think Vikings fans should get excited that for the first time in a long time, there's a franchise quarterback that the team is going to hang its hat on, whose name is not the godforsaken Christian Ponder, which let's not talk about again. I wanted Drake May badly. There's reports now today, as we're recording on Tuesday morning, there's reports that the Vikings tried to offer both of the first and a future first to move up for Drake May. I would have taken it. I thought Drake May was the number one in the draft. I would have taken him over Caleb Williams. I think he is a Josh Allen, Justin Herbert type guy that would have flourished in Minnesota. McCarthy, to me, I've heard him compared to a more athletic Jared Goff or Kirk Cousins 2.0. Not excited about that as a Vikings fan. I felt like we just got off the Kirk Cousins train. Literally in my article I wrote before the draft, I called J.J. McCarthy the Kirk Cousins of draft picks. It's like he's good enough, but not a star. You took him at 11, 10 as we traded up, but I don't know. Like the roster is there. I think it's a great team fit for him. I think he's going to be as good as he can be under Kevin O'Connell and under with the great tackles, with great receivers. Like it's a great spot for him. I get a little worried that on the same day the Vikings lock in to new Kirk Cousins, possibly in a division where Caleb Williams is there now, on top of Jordan Love, those are two superstar possible quarterbacks. And look, even the Lions, not Goff, but the Ben Johnson offense, Minnesota doesn't have that ceiling right now. And I don't know if McCarthy is that. I personally am very excited about Dallas Turner. I already bet him for Rookie of the Year. I wrote that up at Action Network. That number has dropped at some books, but I think it's still like 600, 650 at some places. I think his athleticism package is just exactly what Brian Flores wants. He's going to unleash him. He's going to get a lot of sack opportunities this year, which usually is the stat you want for defensive awards, because we don't watch defense, right? Who had a flashy stat? Give them the award. So I think we like that. The one thing I feel good about as a Vikings fan, best about, is I feel like there's a clear plan. I feel like they made the trade for the pick. They had a plan to go get up and get the quarterback they wanted. Didn't get the guy that they wanted most. Obviously, that's Drake May, but they didn't overpay. I think trading up for J.J. McCarthy both picks would have been a disaster. Getting him at 10, okay, I can live with that. Then they got they go and get Dallas Turner. Both guys are really young and really athletic for their position. That's what they did with Jonathan Grenard. That's what they're doing in general, is how do we get younger and more athletic? How do we move on from Danielle Hunter and some of the other, like Kirk Cousins, and get younger, more athletic versions of this? To me, when I can spot a consistent theme, that gives me confidence that there's a plan here, and I can get on board with trusting a plan that's in place. So maybe that's me talking myself into it, but that's where I'm at.
Pretty much agree with everything you said. It feels like everything else around McCarthy's good. The receivers, the defense, Flores, the infrastructure. I just, like you, I feel like they kind of traded up for B minus C plus upside. I have a hard time seeing McCarthy being one of the five or eight best quarterbacks in the league. Yeah. Look, Purdy's probably not one of the five or eight best quarterbacks in the league. And you know, he's a first down away from winning the Super Bowl, but he's got a lot around him. So I guess it's possible, but I don't know. I mean, it is fun to finally have, like you said, a young quarterback where they drafted and like, hey, maybe this is the guy. Even that hope of having it is valuable, but I don't know. And it's quietly become a very good division now.
Yeah, well, I said in my McCarthy preview before the draft, I said that I think he can be good enough. I think a lot of coaches are going to look at him and say, yeah, I can win with that guy. I can handle having him. Like the way the NFL is now with so many of these offensive-minded coaches, I think that he's going to be that. I just don't know. At the end of the day, great, now you have Brock Purdy. Now you have Jared Goff. Now you have Tua Tagovailoa. They're the quarterbacks of these awesome offenses, but is it because of the quarterback, or is the quarterback just like the joystick for the coach and they have all these amazing weapons and everything around it? And I don't know. Maybe that can just be the Vikings, but it's hard for me to believe McCarthy can quickly enough be notably better than Kirk Cousins, who for all the crap he got was fantastic, was so good in so many ways for Minnesota, even if he wasn't Mahomes or Allen or Burrow at the end of the day. He was never going to be those things, but he was so good at what Kirk Cousins could be. And it's like, okay, what more ceiling is there that McCarthy can have to bring out of it? And it, I described in my article that it feels like, you know, we're getting there with Brock Purdy now. We're going to be there with Tua. They have decisions to make. Are we going to pay $40 million for this B-minus quarterback when the top guys are making $55 million? That's not a good equation for us. That extra $10, $15 million we saved, that is not the amount of difference that you getting Mahomes and we getting Brock Purdy. That's not it. And I feel like McCarthy, my fear is that we just have lived there as Vikings fans for half a decade now with Kirk Cousins. My fear is we're back on that time frame 4 years from now when the rookie scale contract runs out and he's not cheap anymore. Are we right back on the thing of like, okay, well, do we want to sign Kirk Cousins to the expensive deal, or do we want to go back to the well and start over again? So it feels a little bit like punting that decision a few years down the road. That's my biggest fear in the big picture. But, you know, in the meantime, I'm just going to try to be a fan and embrace hope.
Yeah. And the answer is usually these teams, they just, even though it's not the right thing, maybe to keep Tua, to keep Purdy at those prices. And I like Purdy more than Tua, but they don't want to get fired. Like, hey, we can make the playoffs, win 10, 11 games. Maybe we don't win the Super Bowl. Maybe it's not the right thing to do. But if I move on, that's risky and I miss the playoffs. No. And then why'd you do that? And then, you know, a lot of it's job preservation.
For sure.
Brandon, I appreciate you coming on. We got to do this more. Let everyone know where they can find your stuff.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, X, whatever we're calling it these days, at Wheaton Brando, WHEATONBRANDO. All my stuff is at Action Network. I've got lots of articles there, NFL and NBA especially, Action Network podcast for NFL coverage and Buckets podcast for daily NBA coverage. So I'm out there.
All right. Thanks again, man. Hopefully we'll do this again down the road.
That sounds good. Thanks, Will.
All right, that will do it. Thank you to Brandon Anderson. We'll be back Friday with Drew Dantzic. Talk some NBA playoffs. Kentucky Derby will get you ready for that. He will be in Churchill Downs. He'll be live from Churchill. So excited to talk to Drew. See you guys Friday.